You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Nationally, there's a lot of great coaching jobs, and certainly Scott Ruick is not going to get Coach of the Year. But to have this team just 50 seconds away from an NCAA bid with this team after what happened last spring, an Elite Eight, and then a complete decimation of your roster is one for the ages.
That was the call earlier this afternoon on ESPN2. Beavers defying the odds again, of course, and they got the auto bid out of the WCC. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. We'll go out to the phones right now. I wanted to bring on Calvin Wetzel. He covers women's basketball, unlike anybody else, on a lot of platforms, CBS Sports, The Sportsline, Her Hoop Stats, and freelance as well. Calvin, thanks for making time on short notice, but I had to reach out to you, man, because I didn't expect much from the Beaver women's basketball team going into Vegas this week, and shame on me. Lo and behold, 4 seed, they go in there and they get it done. What'd you make of all that?
Oh, what an incredible run, Judah. And, I mean, if you watch those games, it's what March is all about. You're talking about 2 straight, basically buzzer-beating game winners yesterday and the day before. And they came into yesterday's game and today's game as slight underdogs. And, you know, like you said, after losing all the pieces that they lost last year from that Elite Eight squad and the transfer portal, for Scott Ruick to have this team where it is an unbelievable story.
Out here, it's a little bit, you know, interesting, too, because UP, University of Portland, they're in the title game as well, and they were trying to three-peat. And I was joking earlier, Calvin, if there's anything we've learned about trying to three-peat in sports, whether it's the Chiefs in the Super Bowl or something like the University of Portland trying to win a WCC title for 3 years in a row, it's really, really hard to do, especially if you're going against a team like Oregon State. But it kind of shines the light on college hoops in this market. I know you know this. You've been covering this sport for a long time. You've been out here. You've seen games out here. And there's a different vibe out here and a different appreciation for women's college basketball than most markets, I would think. But that's me. I'm in it. I live it every day, and we talk about it a decent amount. How do you see it from the outside on just how the state of Oregon and the market of Portland kind of embraces college basketball?
Yeah, well, you can go back to, you know, Sabrina and Satu and Ruthie and that whole era of Oregon Ducks basketball and then Oregon State, what they've done the last few years and are continuing to do now. And then, like you said, Portland, you know, it's been Gonzaga's league in the regular season the last several years, but for some reason, Portland, come March, they seem to continue to find that magic the last few years and come out of that conference tournament until this year. So there's so much good college hoop in that area, whether it's the power conference level or the mid-major level. And living in the Midwest, gotten to see a little bit more of it, you know, up close with Oregon in the Big Ten now, coming out here a few times a year. So I really love that area for college basketball, and such a rich history and still going strong.
Beavers projections in the tournament. I know this is a different type of pathway for them to the big dance. What do you kind of expect from them, and what does your Calvin Wetzel bracketology kind of think about Oregon State?
That's a great question. You know, they weren't going to get in if they didn't win today, so no one really had them in the tournament or has been thinking about kind of their seeding. But I got to think that they're going to be pretty lowly seeded just because of some of those losses that they took earlier in the season. When you look at their resume, and they're playing really well right now, so if the committee gives them credit for coming in, you know, on the right note, they'll maybe get a little bit of a better line. But they started out 0-5 this year, only won 3 games before Christmas. There's a lot on that resume. I could see them getting a 14 seed, maybe. But I also think it's going to be one of those teams that if you're a 3 seed, or if they get a 13 or a 15, and you know you're a 2 or 4, you don't want to play that team. That's the team that's clicking right now, and they've been here before in March. They know the deal, and they're really, really well coached. So that's not a team that you're going to want to see in the first round, whatever the seed is.
Calvin Wetzel covers women's basketball, CBS Sports, Her Hoop Stats, among others. Well, what do you make of the Ducks? I kind of had my side eye on them on the women's side, and then they were one and done out at the Big Ten tournament with Indiana. But then I look up and I'm like, oh, I guess they're still projected to be an at-large team. What do you make of Kelly Graves and Oregon this year?
Yeah, they've done a great job rebounding after they had a down year or two ever since that era that we talked about with the Big Three. They really have rebounded nicely in the Big Ten and put themselves in a position to potentially still get a bid. I think it's going to be close. They're definitely a bubble team right now, but I would have them on the right side of the bubble. You might see them in that first four in one of those 11 versus 11 type of games. But I do think that they've done enough to get into the tournament, and I could see them doing a little bit of damage.
Now, you're out there in the Midwest, so like you said, you see these things. We talked a lot about the travel with this new Big Ten and Oregon and Washington being a part of it, not to mention what Cal and Stanford are dealing with in the ACC. Did you notice anything in Big Ten play or on the men's and women's side as it came to travel? Was it affecting gameplay? Were all these coaches that were complaining about it, and a lot of them, you know, coming out of USC and UCLA as well with the travel they had to deal with? What are kind of some of the narratives and the dynamics that you feel out at that part of the country as it came to travel in this year one of the new Big Ten?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a numbers guy, and the numbers, whether you're talking about the Big Ten or the ACC or any of these leagues that don't make any geographical sense anymore, the numbers do say that home court is a little bit magnified regardless of which way you go. If you're going 2-3 time zones away, the home teams have fared a little bit better. And the women's side, you see it a lot with the LA teams, USC and UCLA, both in the top 4, 5, 6, of the country basically all year. And if you're a Big Ten team in the Midwest, you got to go out and face both of them in the same weekend, and that's just almost an impossible ask to do. But going the other way, I mean, USC came out to Iowa and lost when Caitlin Clark got her jersey retired. It's tough to make that trip the other way too. So I think it really does just kind of magnify that home court advantage for some of those teams. And it's really tough to ask them to do that, especially on that second leg of the weekend when you've already been traveling and then you got to do it again.
We'll pivot briefly to the WNBA stuff. You know, it's interesting. Caitlin Clark comes into the league. You know, she wins Rookie of the Year going away. She has some great moments with Indiana. But it's also a bit of a different type of stage and arguably a smaller one. I'm not sure that you would agree with that or not. Then the one that she had at Iowa. I mean, it's hard with TV viewership to argue with the run that she had with the Hawkeyes and posting up crazy TV ratings with her Elite Eights against Angel Reese and LSU and Final Fours and championship game appearances. The last calendar year or so with the WNBA with Caitlin Clark coming into it, how has it gone for the league? And are there some things for it to still kind of grow upon from here to really capitalize on this?
Yeah, well, I do agree with you that the stage, just in terms of eyeballs and viewership and things like that, the stage is actually a little bit bigger, you know, in the college game right now, at least at the top, especially for her when she was at Iowa. But the WNBA side is growing fast. We're seeing already the ratings have been skyrocketing, in part thanks to Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, like you said. And it's really interesting because the CBA, the WNBA CBA, the players are expected to opt out of it after this coming season, and going into 2026, there are going to be a lot of things on the table that could really help this league continue to grow and kind of catalyze that. They also just signed a new TV deal in the recent months with ESPN that was a big step up from the previous one. So it's definitely moving in that direction. And when you look at all the numbers in terms of viewership and things like that, it's night and day compared to even just 2 or 3 years ago. So Caitlin Clark has been a big part of that, and it's really cool to see.
Are you side-eyeing this unrivaled basketball league as well? Give us an idea of how this is kind of coming into the women's professional landscape.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, on the women's side, it's basically the only sort of major basketball league really anywhere, especially in this country, that doesn't take place during the winter when you talk about the WNBA. And so a lot of WNBA players in recent years during the quote-unquote regular basketball season in the winter have found other opportunities. They go to play overseas, for example, or recently, a few years ago, Athletes Unlimited started, and some of them do that. But you start to see with overseas, whether it's just some of the smaller stuff, like being away from your family for a while, or some of the bigger issues, like what happened with Brittany Griner, it's not an ideal situation. So that's where you have a league like Unrivaled that comes up and gives the WNBA players sort of another opportunity to continue to hoop over their offseason and do so at home in a more familiar and safe environment. And so I think it's a really cool opportunity for them. And it was really fun, too. I love when new leagues sort of push the envelope and try new things. And so for them to try 3-on-3 full court with a little bit of a shorter court, I think that was really fun.
Last thing for you, Calvin. We're getting a WNBA team in Portland that everybody's excited about to start in 2026. What do you think? I mean, we're all optimistic and enthusiastic out here, but I'm always curious. You cover the league. You see all the ins and outs of all these franchises and all these players. What do you think of Portland's new WNBA team, and what can you kind of share with us on what to expect?
Yeah, well, it's a great market for it. I really love that we're getting another team in the Pacific Northwest, especially in Portland, where, as you know probably better than I do, it's a great market for women's sports overall when you talk about the NWSL and how many fans you guys draw there. And like we said, college basketball at all levels, from Portland to Oregon State to Oregon. And then you look at, like, the sports bra, the new sports bar as of a couple years ago that opened and shows women's sports all day, every day. There are so many women's sports fans up there across the board, and I think it's going to be a fan base that's going to be developed very quickly, and they're going to do really well in terms of attendance. And obviously with any expansion team, it's going to take a few years to sort of get the ball rolling in terms of the wins and losses. But I think that it's a great city for the WNBA to expand into, and I'm really excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how quickly do expansion teams win in the WNBA. You know, it's different in every sport. And I'm looking at, like, Major League Soccer. San Diego just came into the league, and they've started 3-0. You know, they haven't lost yet. What are the kind of natural growing pains, and what goes into starting to build a winner in a league like the WNBA?
Yeah, well, it's been a long time. You know, we have an expansion team this year, the Golden State Valkyries, and this is the first one in well over a decade, which was before I was covering the league even. So it's been quite a while since we've had an expansion team in this league, and I'm sure it'll look a little bit different than it did back then. But it definitely does take longer in this league compared to, you know, what you mentioned in soccer. Or we remember in NHL, the Golden Knights recently just had success right away. I don't see that happening for any WNBA team, but because there are so many expansion teams coming, there's this one this year, like I said, there's the Toronto expansion team, there's Portland. You have enough that they can't all be last place, right? So someone's going to have success and maybe sneak into the playoffs, I think, in maybe year two or year three, but it is going to take a little bit still.
It's Calvin Wetzel, covers women's basketball, CBS Sports, Her Hoop Stats on Twitter, at CWetzel31, a big Illinois fan as well on the men's side. How'd the Fighting Illini do this year?
You know, they started off great. They had an almost entirely new team, thanks to some graduations and transfers. No one knew how it would go. Really great start to the season. A bunch of players got the flu about a month ago or so, and they kind of faltered, lost a bunch of games. But they've been picking it back up and stringing together some wins here. So they're definitely solidly in the tournament at this point. And any Illinois fan who suffered through the decade or so before Brad Underwood got here can be thankful for that, for sure.
You didn't go to Terrence Shannon Jr. night, did you?
I did not, but I saw that upside down banner. That's not a good look.
Oh, that was a rough one. Hey, man, it's great to connect with you. As always, thanks for your insights and expertise. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to having you out to Portland sometime when we get the WNBA team up and rolling.
Yeah, you got it. I can't wait. Thanks for having me, Judah.
There he is, Calvin Wetzel, Her Hoop Stats, and CBS Sports. It's been a little quiet on the Portland WNBA front outside of, we know we have a team and they're going to start play in 2026, but 2026 is not that far away. Like, I got to start knowing some details. Like, I don't even know that we have a team name yet, but I'm fired up. I'm really excited. and we got to get a coach and some players. And
they announced the practice facility out there in Hillsboro.
Yeah, the practice facility out in Hillsboro, which is pretty. It's going to be pretty sweet, state-of-the-art start. Aren't they sharing it with the Thorns?
Yeah, them and the Thorns will both be using that.
With the ownership group is the same, the Bethal family.
Looks great. Looks,
Raj
the,
Sports.
The renderings all look good.
So, I tell you what, man, we get a WNBA team up and rolling. You get a baseball team up in here. All of a sudden, we're cooking with gas. And selfishly, that'd be great for us in the media market as well. But it is an underserved market. But I will say, even in an underserved market, it gives opportunity for teams like the Beavers and Ducks and Women's Hoops, UP, to capitalize. And they have with their success. And Oregon State certainly has themselves today going to the NCAA tournament. Thanks to Calvin Wetzel for joining us. When we come back, we'll close up shop on this Tuesday edition of the show. Get you caught up with some of the headlines around the world of sports. Judah Nubi, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth.